Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
And I never would have probably tried Spam if it weren't for my dad.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Look at the meaty thighs on this Italian player.
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I was freaking brothers every way like MJ.
Zardoz.
How dare you, Luis Valbuena's a national treasure.
I'm a pepper jack guy.
Well, I most definitely have a throbbing Corey Kluboner.
So you're delicious and sticky.
Here's the deal, and I love, you know, being part of a lot of these communities that we're part of Facebook pages. We have a lot of people that follow us on Twitter, and I see a lot of posts on these different Facebook pages that we have. Okay, so I'm throwing this out there as kind of like a PSA. Like, I want you to picture that I am the, after you were watching the G.I. Joe classic cartoons in the 1980s, I am the segment there you go. Thank you. I'm in this segment afterwards where they're trying to kind of teach you a life lesson.
Where like the snow guy is in a urinal telling kids not to, you know, not to peek at other people at the urinals, whatever goes on in those things. What good was the snow guy, first off? All right, I'm sorry to interrupt. You can continue.
He could blend in like a snow situation.
Oh, yeah, he'd be great where I'm at.
Good.
Yeah, there you go. North Dakota, Antarctica, he's your guy. So anyway. So that's what I want you to picture as I'm doing this. Okay. So as I'm scrolling through these different pages, every once in a while I'll comment if somebody has a question or something they don't know. Okay. So I cannot tell you how many times I've seen people asking, should I trade Mike Trout for this? Is this fair for Mike Trout? People, it's Mike Trout. He is the best player in the game. Unless you were getting your doors just absolutely blown off, you're not trading him. Okay, you're taking him number one overall, you're getting 100 runs, you're getting 40 homers, you're getting 25 steals, you're getting a 300 batting average, you're getting solid OBP, and if there's anything else I'm leaving out, it's there. He's the guy, okay? So, I like the one that sent me over the edge today was I saw one that somebody put, should I trade Mike Trout for this? And it was like Mike Trout and two lesser pieces, so they were even throwing a couple players in there, as crappy as they were, for, I think it was like, Daniel Murphy, Buster Posey, and Zach Godley. Stop it. Stop the nonsense. Stop the madness. Just knock it off. You're not trading Mike Trout unless you're getting like a king's ransom. Okay. Now, let me give you an example. Okay. 2 years ago, the only league I've ever had Mike Trout in, other than last year when he was hurt most of the year, I actually traded him. And here's what I got for Mike Trout. And it took me forever to get this. And I'm surprised it didn't get vetoed by the league. And this is a dynasty league. Okay, so I actually traded Mike Trout for – I got Mike Trout, and I threw in a couple of lesser pieces that ended up – I looked at it today. I ended up throwing in Prince Fielder, which was the year that he ended up hurting his neck and being out. Trevor May was a piece that I threw in. And then there was somebody else I threw in that wasn't really worth anything. Okay, I got back Paul Goldschmidt. I got back D. Gordon. I got back Corey Seager. I got back Ian Desmond when he was actually worth a crap. And I got back Jose Berrios in a keep forever dynasty, which to me I thought was a pretty good return on my investment. Even so, I was still a little bit leery about giving him up. But it was basically I got four starting players for a while for Mike Trout, and I had a pretty good outfield. Okay, so please stop with the Mike Trout trade questions. You're not trading him. You're keeping him. He's your number one pick. He's going to play like a number one pick. Just stop the nonsense, please.
So who would you trade Mike Trout for?
I mean, it would have to be.
I know. I'm kidding. I'm just trying. I just want to continue.
Yeah. See what you did there.
The short answer for this question is always: do you have to ask, should I trade Mike Trout for? Then the answer is no. I mean, the only time you trade Mike Trout for anything, particularly in a redraft league, is when you go, "Holy cow!" and then you just do it.
Exactly. Like, and that's what I did. Like, you know, to me, that right there is, okay, so I got Paul Goldschmidt in 2016. I've probably got three or four awesome years from him. I've got Seager for the next, I don't know, 8-10 years. I've got 50-60 steals from D. Gordon, no matter where he plays. I've got Jose Berrios. If he can turn the corner a little bit, he's going to be a stud. So I thought that was a pretty solid return in a dynasty league where you keep everybody.
Guy Dordan. That's a pretty good one. Go ahead.
And Shaul Polschmidt.
Flexado should have been in there, but what I really got out of that whole tirade and that was a good one, is when you said you had to really have your doors blown off.
Yes.
And that kind of, you know, weird phrase, nobody has doors to be blown off, but it just reminded me of something that somebody said on a podcast this past week or two that stood out to me as just terrifying. But they slipped over one of those phrases, and they said, it would really open my eyebrows if this happened. And I'm like, holy Lord, if your eyebrows are opening up, go see a physician right now.
Oh my. Could you imagine if your eyebrows open up and your doors got blown off?
As someone with some hefty eyebrows, I would be terrified if they were to open up at any point in my life.
It would be almost as terrifying as episode 148 of the Nasty Cast. Everybody, welcome to the show. I am Nathan Dockin. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin. And back from his visit to Flavortown, it's Van Lee. Welcome back.
That's right. I was in that van. I was traversing the countryside. I was saying things like Narbonne and, you know, Rocket or whatever other things he said. I had spiked tips in my hair. My sunglasses were on the back of my head, which makes a ton of sense. But I'm returned. I'm here, and I'm ready to dispense fantasy baseball advice, and that's what's important.
Very good. Is it like, you say dispense, like can somebody put a quarter in you and you dispense the knowledge?
That's right, yeah. Just stuff quarters wherever you can find. I actually prefer those Sacagawea dollar coins if you have them. I don't know if those even exist anymore, but I prefer that, of course. And, I already had a joke. Oh, if anyone has ever played never mind. I can't remember the name of the game. The short answer is, as I was going to say, one conductor on the one-way train to Flavortown. So that pretty much sums it up.
There you go. All right. Well, Ron Rigney, what are you boying?
Oh, I'm picturing Van Lee driving up to Flavortown in his van.
I can just
picture him like with the arm out the window, the bright flowery print shirt on, the frosted tips, popping some pizza rolls in the mouth, you know,
screaming because that's what he does on every episode. He just screams nonstop.
It's angelic. Almost the picture I have in my head.
The tickets to Flavortown are literally pizza rolls.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So what's your favorite Flavortown moment? Tweet us at NastyCastPod. You can also find Van at ManlyVanly, or Ron is at TheRealMade. You can almost also email us NastyTraxPods@gmail.com. That's TraxPods@gmail.com. If you enjoy the show, please drop us a rate and review on iTunes. We will greatly, greatly appreciate it. We'll shout you out on the show as well. And also, if you like us and you think we deserve a buck or two every month, go to Patreon and patreon.com/nastypod. Chuck us a buck or two. Also, we do the Fantabulous Fantrax Dynasty Baseball Podcast. We're going to be recording that right after we're done here. And on this episode, we're going to be talking about the top five Cardinals and the top five Orioles prospects. So that will be halfway as exciting, at least. But we have much to get to, gentlemen, so let's get into it. Let's recap the podcast league first, shall we? We had that this past Monday, and it was an auction. It was 17 teams ended up being in that league, and it took just over 5 hours to complete. The longest draft I have ever been a part of, but it was totally awesome.
I wonder why it took that long, because it felt like it was going insanely fast, especially early. But I also was dealing with, like, I was doing it on a laptop because I had a friend of the podcast, Brian Vaughn, at my apartment. And so we were doing it, and I wasn't doing it at my desktop. I was doing it on my laptop. And so I don't like trackpads on laptops, so I usually use a Bluetooth mouse. And for whatever reason, it wouldn't work, and I was changing batteries and frantically, and the draft is going, and panicking, and I don't. And then finally, once I got all set up, I realized that everyone was just spending $80 on every single player, so I didn't really miss out on a whole lot of stuff.
but there were some large buys,
certainly early in particular. But it was a fun draft. I had a blast. Did you guys enjoy it?
I definitely enjoyed it. I don't know. Like, it's weird because I thought I was doing a really nice job of kind of staying out of some of the more expensive players at the beginning, and then all of a sudden I have no money to spend. It's like I'm waiting for the dollar bargain guys to come up, and so I had to wait. I'll bet honestly I probably spent one of those 5 hours not buying anybody because I couldn't afford them.
Well, it was, yeah, it was a 17-team league, so to kind of preface it, we had a lot of teams, took away a few positions, so it wouldn't be super, super deep, but it was still a fairly deep league for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's four outfielders instead of five, and then just eight overall pitching slots instead of nine. And, of course, the league, as always, is quality starts instead of wins, and then OBP instead of batting average. So I don't know if you wanted to kind of go over what you thought your teams were overall, like if you liked the outcome. I got some best buys that I jotted down here that I really liked.
Yeah, sounds good. Here, I'll start off with a couple of things. I printed out my team. Overall, I do kind of like my team. I think there are some flaws that I will need to address. I didn't really have, per se, a pure big bopper. So no, you know, guy who's going to die in a plane crash. Ha, but I'm tis. No,
too soon.
No huge home run guy. I did end up with Quack Davis, who's 40 home run power, I mean, every year, so that's okay. But I got guys like Trey Mancini, who I think are going to overperform the dollar amount I paid for him. I got Ryan Zimmerman for, I think, $4 or $5, and I was totally cool with that, just if he even comes close to repeating what he did. OBP league, I like having Yasmani Grandal as a catcher. That's a one-catcher league. Bogarts, I know you're down on him, Nate, but I like him for his overall production.
I've actually, you know what, just to interject, I've really turned, like, become more optimistic, I guess, as the spring has come along, and I've seen sort of the power come back a little bit with him. Mm-hmm. So I considered actually doing one of those segments for the show today, like who has changed your mind in spring training, and he probably would have been number one on my list. It's not like I was super pessimistic,
sure,
to begin with, but now I've gone kind of from ambivalent to sort of pro Bogarts.
Oh, nice. Well, he's on my team. But I also ended up getting Elvis Andrus just because I thought the cost was so low. So I don't really need both of those guys. So I'm looking to probably trade one of them. Obviously, it's nice to have Bogarts and Andrus as a shortstop and then a middle infielder. But I think in a league like this, like, for example, I got Ahmed Rosario. If he ends up performing at all, he could be an okay middle infielder, but he's sitting on my bench right now. Adrian Beltre continues to go for virtually nothing. Justin Upton, I really like where I got him. I got everybody's boy, it seems like, that comes on the show, Kevin Kiermaier, KK Slider himself. Pitching wise, I did try to bid you up on Luis Castillo, and then you just kind of backed out, but I was all right with it. It was too much money, but it was okay. I'll take him for what I got.
$23, and this is a $260 budget for, yeah, those.
Too much money, track. But that's okay. I'm all right with that. He's not my ace. Luis Severino is my boy. He's my ace. And then I got some pitchers I like Chase Anderson. I think he's probably not as good as he performed last year, but if he's healthy, I think he's a pretty solid pitcher. I got Jeff Samardzija, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. Walker Buehler is a guy it seems like I end up with on a lot of teams as a guy I think who comes up some way at some point in this season and pitches for the Dodgers. And then closer-wise, I did what I always do. I just wait until late. So I've got Blake Parker and Cam Bedrosian. So who knows what comes of that situation, but I've got them both. I tried to do the same with Fernando Rodney and Addison Reed, but somebody bid me up on Reed, so I ended up getting just Rodney. So I kind of hope he holds that job. But overall, I like my team. I guess same thing, Ron. You want to just kind of go over yours, and then Nate can do his stuff?
Yeah, I did. I think I did all right. I'm a little light on power. I would have liked to got a little bit more pop, but I think in the end, I'm going to have a nice, just kind of across the board team that is going to do a lot of things well. I don't know if I'm going to excel in anything per se. I'd say probably money wise, I like in an OBP league, especially, I like getting Marwin Gonzalez for $12. I didn't think that was too bad, considering you can play him a bunch of places, and he's probably going to. I don't know if he'll start every game for the Astros with all the bats that they have, but I think he's going to get enough at bats that he's going to be fine. I would say that I liked the fact that I got Joey Gallo. I just hated the fact that he cost me $25, but I really wanted to get him. That was way more than I was thinking I was going to have to pay for him.
Oh, yeah, he came out at a certain point.
Yeah,
yeah, everybody wanted him.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean.
That was late in the draft when that happened.
It was. Yeah, it was fairly late, and I was thinking about waiting a little bit longer, but I had the money, and I was like, you know what? I need to just go after this guy if I want to get him. Because that's the thing about auctions, too, is if you want a guy, you need to go out and pay the money instead of waiting, because you're going to lose out on quite a few guys that way. So I got him for 25, 40 homers, nice OBP. He's tailor-made for this league, so I was okay with that in the end. Whit Merrifield for $18. I think he's a guy that I have a few shares of overall. My biggest money player was Corey Kluber. And I missed out on a couple of the other aces. I wanted to try to get one of the top four or five pitchers. Was able to do that. Was able to get Jose Ramirez. Nate, I was a little disappointed that we didn't get a bidding war going between the two of us, because I know Joe Ram is your boy. But I like getting him there. Benintendi for 35, nice 20 upside at the least, I think. I think we're going to be seeing something maybe closer to 25-25 possibly. And then when I put it on autopilot and I had to just kind of get stuck with who I got stuck with, you go down the list of the dollar guys that I got, and a couple of guys I'm taking a little bit of a chance on too. Saves, I'm on the pitching side, saves I'm very light on. I only ended up getting one true closer, Edwin Diaz for 14, which I thought was good. As far as down the list a little bit further with my dollar guys, I have another catcher in Russell Martin, which is okay in an OBP format. I just don't really want to roster two catchers. I was able to get Yadi Molina for $3. I was happy getting Steven Souza, even though he's going to be on the DL for a while, at $2. If I can stash him and he can come back and give me anything close to what he put up last year, I think that's well worth the $2. Speculating on AJ Minter for $1, speculating on Carson Smith for $1. You know, we talked about those guys in our closer preview. They could step up and get a few cheap saves here and there. Yeah, Freddie Galvis for $1. I know he's not an ultra exciting name, but the potential for 10 to 15 homers and 10 to 15 steals. Decent batting average. He's had a pretty good spring, so I was okay with that. I got Franklin Barreto, which he ended up getting sent down. I don't think that's going to be for too long, though. And then Felix Hernandez for $1. I mean, he's definitely a shell of his former self, but he is still just 31 years old, so he's not ultra ancient, even though there is a little bit of mileage on the tires there. And I got a couple of my boys that I'll talk about later on, in Eric Hosmer and Lance McCullers. I paid up for those guys because I have them pretty much everywhere. So overall, not bad. I think there's a couple of things I could have done a little better. But I will say, I think that's the first time I've done an auction that's been a complete brand new team auction, because the only other auction league I have, I inherited a team, and we still have the draft. The auction draft, but we also, everybody keeps 10 guys as well. So that was a little different for me in that regard. Plus, I don't know that I've ever, and that's also the biggest draft I've ever been in, because my 19 teamer that I'm in, I inherited that team as well. So definitely a lot of fun, but I had to call it, you know, I had to tap out at about the 4.5 hour mark because I was about to fall asleep. So overall, not too bad.
Yeah, you had an early morning too. I think the most important thing to note about this league is that I've won it 2 years straight. So with that said, my team is freaking awesome. I'll keep it short.
So modest.
Yeah. Well, it actually, no listener, this is the fourth year that we've been doing the podcast league, and former co-host Joe won it the first year, and then I've won it the last 2 years. So we have yet to have a listener defeat us. So hopefully this will be the first year where we are all defeated. I'll keep.
And what's your team name, real quick, before you preview?
Kentucky Meat Shower.
Okay.
So everybody just Google that, and it is just a fun story.
I don't think I will.
So I ended up getting. It's not that bad, really.
Yeah, it's not what you think it is. It is actually pretty cool.
It does not take you to Pornhub.
Oh well.
So I invested in some hitters early.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Hoskins, Lindor, Ozuna, I drafted them all early. Chris Archer was my ace for $29. And then after that, the only I got Jose Barrios for 14, which I felt like was a good value, but I largely went after hitters early, and I knew pretty much after I drafted Delino DeShields for $16. That's more than I wanted to pay for him. And I knew it was pretty much going to be dollar days for the rest of my pitching staff. I managed to get to the steal of the draft in Aroldis Chapman for $12 for my closer.
Considering we'll what he almost went for in the draft, yes, definitely.
That's right. Brian accidentally apparently typed in $215.
He as soon as he hit, because he was bidding, I bid on it, and then he bid on him, and as soon as he hit enter and I saw that 217 come up, I saw his eyes widen, and he turned and looked at me, and I was like, oh boy, that's okay, we'll be able to fix it, and he can take care of it. And we did, of course, but he almost got Aroldis Chapman for $217 was the actual dollar.
Was it 17? Yeah. I thought it was 15.
17, holy cow.
Well, like I said, he just didn't want to get shut out in the save department. He wanted to lock in some save production, and he went after it, man.
You got to lock it down.
You got to like a guy that went after it like that.
So, yeah, it was dollar days for my pitching staff after that. I ended up drafting, buying, Eduardo Rodriguez and Carlos Rodon just as dollar stashes. And then until they come up, I'll just stream from the wire as much as you can do that in a 17-team league. But I wanted to list a couple of my favorite buys before we move on. Starling Marte to Dave for $27. That was pretty early, and I feel like that's a good bargain for what he's going to give you. Gary Sanchez for $27 to Joe Boo's Rum. I actually was going to bid on him, and then I can't remember. Oh, the next one I have is Wilson Contreras, who went to $17 to Hammer and Hanks. That's the one that I meant to click, and I was just too slow because, like, I was chatting and got caught up in that, and yeah, the clock was like not visible when you're chatting on my screen. And so I ran out of time to bid on him. But another bid, Corbin for $2 late to Joe Boob's Rum. I like that a lot. Obviously, I'm a big Corbin guy this year. Like I said, Aroldis Chapman for $12 to me, pretty awesome. And then I thought this was funny. Evan spent $7 on Archie Bradley, who clearly has not been listening to me, for especially on the closer episode last week. And Shelly ended up getting a Boxberger for $3, so half the cost. And he will actually be the closer, and we'll get to that a little bit. Now, Brian got Lomo for $3. I was kind of holding out for my last, like, corner infield spots for guys like that, but I still didn't even have enough money to outbid him on Lomo. He also got me on friggin' Wilson Ramos. Not happy about that. Then Jerry, he had back-to-back $3 buys of Jordan Montgomery and Jose Peraza. I like that. And then he also got Chu and Belt for $3 again. I thought Jerry did really, really well in this draft. And then, Van, you got Blake Parker for $1 at the end. And you kind of hedged your bets. I noticed that in the end game as far as saves in Anaheim. And one of those pulled through for you, and we'll get to that in a little bit too. But Shelly had a really interesting draft too. She was the last one to buy her first player, and she was also the first one done. So she really attacked the meaty center of that draft.
There was a period where she was, it just seemed like Shelly was bidding $7 on everyone. And it didn't matter who it was. It was just like, bam, $7, bam, $7. And it was late in the draft, or later in the draft. So it was just kind of interesting. But it was a fun. I'm glad everybody joined in with us. I think it was a good experience, not only for us, but for our listeners and our fans and our friends. So I hope they enjoyed it as much as we did. And I'm excited to get the year going and kind of see how it goes. So for our listeners out there, remember, I do have, like I said, both Xander Bogaerts and Elvis Andrus. So if you're in need of a middle infielder, get in touch with me, because there'll be somebody I want to trade for. And also, the last thing I wanted to say was my first nomination was Scott Kingery, because I think people are going freaking crazy over Scott Kingery right now for not necessarily no good reason, but I think it's just a little bit overblown. So I was curious to see what he would go for. And he only went for $10. So I thought that was a little less than I expected. But I think that's not the most egregious of bids, but I probably wouldn't have done it for $10. But
yeah,
it was fine.
It was a really disciplined group. I was very surprised. I mean, aside from the huge players going for exorbitant values, actually, not a lot of them were too far over the prices that I had on these guys going into the draft. I mean, obviously, you're pretty much always going to pay more in an auction for the biggest names, and I don't necessarily have a huge problem with that. And a lot of the values were pretty close to what I had down for them. And so I just kind of early on, I ended up just sort of peppering guys that were maybe $1 or $3 cheaper than what I had, Matt. But yeah, really, really fun draft. Auctions are always unique, you know, from one to the other. And it was a blast. Great chat. Great, great group of people. So totally stoked to play against these guys all year, and gals, I should say.
And the only reason, by the way, in last year's league that I finished, I don't know, fourth or fifth or whatever it was, is because I got the bargain of the draft, and that was because it had been announced that he was hurt for the first 2-3 weeks of the season. JD Martinez, I got for $16. And I remember even you, Nate, were like, I probably should have bid on that because you're huge on JD Martinez. But boy, did that work for me.
And Wilson Contreras, I mentioned him. Yeah, I really think, like, the later and later we get into draft season, you know, I mentioned this with Xander Bogaerts, how I'm kind of coming around. The more and more I think about it, the more I think that Wilson Contreras could probably give you a good 80 to 90% of whatever Gary Sanchez is going to put up for you. And he's going, obviously, much, much cheaper than Gary Sanchez, too. So I turned into a pretty big fan of Wilson Contreras later on in draft season. Unfortunately, I was too slow on the trigger, so I couldn't get him.
What is
ended up with.
But remember, this league as a one catcher league, like, for example, if Gary Sanchez's overall dollar value is, say, $27 or whatever it may be, I'm probably going to need to knock, you know, $8 off that before I want to buy them. I mean, that's an exaggeration, but in a one catcher league, it's, they're just not quite as valuable. So even though you lost out on Contreras, and yeah, it probably would have been great to have him there, I still don't think it's that big of a deal in a one catcher league.
No, I'm not losing any sleep over it. And the only guys who I was willing to pay more than like $2 or $3 on was either Sanchez or Contreras.
Sure.
So I was kind of bummed out to miss out on both of those, because I do think that having either one of those guys is going to be a pretty sizable advantage this year. But in any case, let's move on to the bulk of today's show. We've got news for you. Then we're going to go over our favorite fourth outfielders, which Ron brought up last week sort of jokingly, but I thought it was actually a good idea. I guess we'll see how it turns out. Sort of guys who have a bit of a convoluted path to playing time, but if something breaks right, some guys who could see big values that you can draft for pretty cheap, or maybe even pick up off the waiver wire, since most people are done drafting at this point. And then we're going to finish out the show with pretty much the most guys that we drafted this year who we believe in a lot, who we ended up with the most shares of.
Hey, real quick, let's go ahead and take a break here, and then we'll come back and get into that.
Time after time, if you're nasty, you can look and you will find me.
And we're back.
Let's get on to the news first. Sal Perez was carrying his friggin' luggage and slipped, and he's now out 4 to 6 weeks with a torn MCL. I'm not really sure, I guess, what kind of analysis there is to do on this. It just kind of sucks, because there is no backup catcher there that is going to be worth anything. It just kind of sucks for Perez. And with drafts gone, you can't really ask where you're drafting him. So maybe we could just move on. Unless either of you has anything to say, you can stop me. But
the only thing I'll say is just I remember when I read the news about it, and we talked about this prior to recording the show. It said something along the lines, the way the verbiage was set up was like, Salvador Perez, who was forced to carry his own luggage, tore his MCL and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, it just, there are a number of things that
like
annoyed me about that. So, like some peasant, he had to carry his own luggage. It's like, who gives, just whatever. But anyway. Jeez. Yeah, sucks. Royals, it doesn't matter. They're not going to compete. No one cares. So, whatever. It sucks.
Fetch my slippers.
Indeed. Yes.
Alfred?
Yeah.
All right. So, Mark Melancon apparently is not going to be ready for opening day. So, Ron, we'll throw this to you. God, freaking Mark Melancon. I hate this dude. He's all of a sudden my least favorite reliever of all time. Who do you think is going to be closing for Mark Melancon to open the season?
I mean, I think you got to say Sam Dyson, because he's got the experience, but I as I'm looking through that depth chart, which, by the way, the Giants pitching staff as a whole is a gigantic mess right now. It's ridiculous with all the stuff.
You might say it's
on
a hole.
It's a definite black hole of nothingness. I guess I would go with Sam Dyson, but I mean, Tony Watson's not bad, but I think Hunter Strickland's a guy that you might want to keep your eye on. You know, he's a guy that they kind of talked about a few years ago having this job and didn't really pan out the way they had wanted it to. And he's looked pretty decent in certain spots. So he's a guy that I might look at first. It's frustrating if you paid anything in the auction or if you drafted Melancon hoping for the bounce back, because it's already kind of a flop to start the season. But I guess I would start with Dyson, but I would also, if Dyson's gone, I think the other guy I might speculate on would be Hunter Strickland, definitely.
Yeah, and Dyson is the guy. He was the guy last year that they kind of went with when it all shaked out, and he got some saves. He's been a closer before with the Rangers. He's not great, but I think he'll be good enough to get the job done. So I've scooped him up in a couple of leagues. I don't think they're going to go with Watson, because as we've seen in this day and age, everybody likes to keep your lefties available for, you know, matchups earlier in the game. And Strickland, for whatever reason, see, last year I thought he would get the opportunity when Melancon originally went down, but instead they just randomly went with that Derek Law guy, and then he sucked. So then they just kind of toyed around, and it eventually went to Dyson. So I'm 99.9% sure it's going to be Dyson, and to be honest, I think he holds the job for as long as Melanson's out. Now, what I wanted to say about Melancon is that he had that surgery because apparently part of his arm was dying. Like the muscle was actually atrophying in his
arm. Sweet God.
Yeah, it's some horrible, horrible story. And I didn't know about this until much later in the, well, maybe within a couple weeks, because I've drafted Melanson in a place or two thinking he was going to be a really good bounce back candidate, because I know he doesn't strike out a lot, but he's always been able to get saves. And there's still some opportunity for that if he does get healthy. But certainly it's a blow for any of the Melanson owners. But if you can pick up Dyson, I think, then you'll be fine. Stick with him and then swap Melanson back out. Get him off your DL when he's back to healthy.
I'm really worried about Melanson now. I was actually in on him. Just last week, I mentioned him as one of the guys who I was okay with. It has ADP, you know, coming off of an injury-marred season. He was really depressed as far as his ADP. And
oh, I thought
so
you
I
mean
actually,
he was just sad. He was like, aw.
Oh, he's probably sad, too. He's just sitting around, you know, bumming it on the couch. So I only actually have him. I only ended up with him on one team, but that's one too many. And the fact that, like, I was like, okay, yeah, fine, they're bringing him along slowly. He'll be okay for the start of the season. And now the start of the season is here, and he's still recovering and still not feeling great. And that gives me a lot of concern. And I think I would also go with Dyson. I don't know that I would necessarily, if we're talking about percentage of fab that we're going to drop on him, just because it's not entirely clear, I would say maybe like 8% of my budget, like $8
sure.
on $100.
Who knows how good the Giants are even going to be. So, I mean, it's questionable as to how many wins they're going to get. So that also needs to be factored into it.
Well, yeah. And then the question too is like, how long is Melanson really going to be out? Is this going to end up to be something that keeps him out for the entire season? I'm honestly kind of worried about that at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's been since September when he had the surgery and he's still not healthy, that really, really, really concerns me. The only reason I'm not draft or bidding a little bit more in Fab is just because I'm not sure if they do go with Tony Watson instead. Like I said, I'm not putting any eggs in the Hunter Strickland basket. They just like him in that setup role for whatever reason. I would say that it's Dyson, but not 100% sure. Don't really know how long Melanson's out, so I'm not going all in Fab by any means.
Well, I think the thing real quick, too, that you got to think about is when you mentioned a little bit of save chances. When you look at the rotation, I mean, they're looking at Ty Belch right now to be their opening day starter. So when you got him and Cueto and Holland and Chris Stratton as your main four, and I don't even know who your fifth is, that's not too promising as far as having a lot of save chances. I don't think they're going to get a lot of leads handed to them anyway.
Yeah, so that actually transitions right into the next two news items that we have, is that's Madison Bumgarner has broken his finger. He could miss the entire first half of the season. And Jeff Samardzija, he strained his booby. He's out for a few weeks at least, so they're both on the disabled list. So, Van, do you have any interest in, like, Chris Stratton has been sort of a sleeper name bandied about, or anybody else who's going to be filling in the short term for these guys?
Not really. I mean, I guess you could argue that with that ballpark that virtually anybody could be semi-successful. It's the equivalent of, you know, getting a hitter that gets called up in Colorado. However, I think with the state of pitching the way it is today, there are so many just, you know, rookie-level guys that I'm much more interested in. So I've kind of ignored the bulk of the situation there in San Francisco just because the team has been on a GM level kind of mismanaged for the last couple of years, and they trade away their assets, or they just don't have the prospect stuff or the big names. So maybe some of these guys fill in some innings and it's semi-useful, but it's not enough that I already have guys on my bench on my drafts that I could put in instead of, you know, guys that I'm going to pick up in that regard.
Yeah, there's nobody there that wouldn't already be on your team. The only I've got Johnny Cueto. I've speculated on him in a couple of places just because I think he has, you know, he's got way more solid years underneath his belt than he does years like he had last year. And I think that he could be a bounce back candidate. Now, do I think he's going to get back to the seasons he put up with the Reds where he was kind of, you know, at the top of his game? No, but I think if you can get him for a decent of value, you've already gotten him. Obviously, I think he could be a bounce back. But as far as am I going to go out and add any of the guys that are going to fill in for them? No, because I think there's other guys on the waiver wire that I could maybe go get. Or like Van said, I've already got guys on my bench that are going to give me similar results. So I don't really think there's anybody there that I'm too interested in as far as their rotation.
Yeah, I do agree. In a deep league, maybe Chris Stratton could give you kind of like Mike Leake type of numbers. But Derek Holland, I could not be less interested in Derek Holland. He's been so terrible for a long time, and I used to love him, and he burned me so many times. I'm just completely off that train. Let's get into some more positive news, though, and that is that the Box is back, baby. He has been tabbed as the closer for the Arizona Diamondbacks, and who was it that ended up with that? It was Shelley that ended up with him in our draft. And I actually ended up with Boxberger in a bunch of leagues this year myself, sort of speculated between him and Archie Bradley and, of course, Yoshihisa Hirano. So, Ron, I guess, how are you valuing Boxberger? Do you think he's going to be able to close onto this job? And if he doesn't, do you think it's going to be Bradley or Hirano that would step in after that?
I mean, it's tough to say who might step in, but I think that he's got a pretty good grasp on it just because, like what we said earlier, it's been pretty evident for a while that they don't want to put Bradley there. They like him in the role he has now. And I don't know if that's because they really want to keep him there or they still hold out hope that they can maybe stretch him into a starter. But I don't think they want to move him there, and they made that pretty clear. Hirano, I think would be the next guy up just because I think they want to keep Bradley in that role. But I think – if you can get Boxberger, I had him on waivers in a couple places after our, expansion drafts or whatever, redrafts were over and done with, and I got him for nothing. And so I think that, you know, he's the guy that's there. It's just I worry a little bit about injury with him. But overall, I think that just the amount that you paid for to speculate for him, and like you said, he went for $3 in our auction when Bradley went for $7. I think pretty much wherever you got him, you got a pretty good value, and especially if you drafted him. So I'd say Hirano next just because Bradley's in a role that I think they want to keep him in.
And the one thing I want to point out here is with Boxberger, the issue is not performance, because when he pitches well. Mm-hmm. Last year in his 29 and a third innings, he had a 3.38 ERA. FIP and XFIP are right there with it, so they agree with that. 12.27 K per nine, 3.38 walks per nine. He walks too many guys, but he strikes out enough, and clearly the ERA reflects that, you know, he doesn't give up too many home runs, so he's going to succeed as long as he's healthy. So if he is, and let's say he throws 70 innings and gets all of his save opportunities, you could have one of the league leaders in saves, and I think that could be the case here. But that's a big if he stays healthy. Now, that said, I will differ slightly from Ron here, and I'll say that if Boxberger does get hurt, I think maybe the Diamondbacks finally just kind of throw up their hands and say, all right, let's let Bradley do it. That said, the way I kind of described this situation was that it makes the most baseball sense right now to have Boxberger close and Bradley be the multi-inning guy. But unfortunately, as fantasy players, it doesn't quite make as much sense in that regard, because Bradley's clearly the better pitcher, even though Boxberger's still a pretty good pitcher. So it's unfortunate in that regard. That said, if you're out there and you drafted Archie Bradley, he's going to be one of those Andrew Miller, Matt Andrees types that will provide you really good ratios while getting you some innings. I mean, I think he could probably throw 90-plus innings based on just throwing multiple innings at a time, and he's going to give you a lot ton of strikeouts. He's going to be really good. So I don't necessarily know that I cut him in any regard, even if I don't think he's going to get the closer job. I'd still hang on to him just for one of those things where if you get a starter get hurt and you just need to throw somebody in just to hopefully get some good ratios and innings, Bradley's going to be there to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I do think if you're holding on to him for saves instead of just ratios and Ks, I do think that he would be probably the third option behind Hirano. So it would take either really, really poor performance from both of Hirano and Boxberger, or injuries to both of them. Like you touched on, Van, that's definitely not out of the question for Brad Boxberger to find the disabled list. So, but without those two scenarios, I don't think that Bradley sees the closer's role, because he is young, and the Diamondbacks were actually kind of penny pinching this offseason, and so they don't have any incentive to pay him saves and arbitration at any point in the near future. So let's see. We've got some bad news now. Greg Bird out 6 to 8 weeks. Ron, are you ever investing in Greg Bird again?
I mean, it's you know, he's one of those Charlie Brown guys that I call him. You know, when you get the football pulled out from under you, when you think it's finally going to be there and you're finally going to get to kick it. Like, you know, you draft Greg Bird and you want to see what he can do at Yankee Stadium, because he has shown flashes of it, and this just keeps happening. And you wonder what it is with some of these guys. Is it bad luck? Is it just some guys are not built to take the grind of being an everyday player? I don't really know what it is, but I would have to get him at a huge discount. I honestly don't know that I have him anywhere. I might have got him in the Couch Tomatoes League that we drafted the other night that Mike Neese runs. I can't remember. It seemed like I got him late somewhere, but I mean, he's a guy that I'm drafting really late if I can get him, and if I have to cut him and move on, I'm pretty used to that by now. But I just wish he would get healthy, because I'm just chomping at the bit to see what this guy can do in that lineup, in that ballpark, and it just is not – happening. So, I mean, I don't have him a lot of places anyway, but I want to see him more from a fan standpoint than I do from a fantasy baseball standpoint.
Ask me the same question, Nate. Will I ever want to buy in on Greg Bird again?
Van Lee, are you ever going to invest in Greg Bird again?
No, because I never did in the first place, because I always thought he was quite a bit overrated. now, that said, I actually did own him in a auction redraft league, and it wasn't that big of a deal, because the only reason I owned him is because he went for so cheap. Here's the interesting thing, and I believe Rob Silver brought this up on my other podcast, the Launch Angle podcast, is that if you look at the Yankees offseason, the way they constructed the team, they cut Adam Lind. He was originally going to be their non-roster invitee to maybe be a backup first baseman. They don't really have a first baseman backup. So that leads me to believe that maybe they were pretty confident that Bird was going to be healthy. They thought their guy was going to be okay. And then suddenly this comes from, quote, out of nowhere. How do you miss like a softball-sized calcium deposit or whatever it was he had removed from his ankle? So I
believe it was Sacagawea coin size.
So there you go. So I don't know what the Yankees were kind of thinking in that regard, because it feels like they maybe thought he was going to be there. Now, that said, if this really is a 6 to 8 week thing and he does come back and he's healthy, then sure, there's some value to be had. I'm not going to cut him by any regards unless I'm really, really, really forced out of it in a roster spot. And even if that happens, I'm going to try and trade him first. But I just don't see a whole lot coming out of him. I think he's going to be one of those, you know, glass players that just seems to get hurt, even though a lot of his injuries seem kind of fluky. But they just keep adding up and adding up and adding up. So I'm out on Greg Bird, just like I always have been out on Greg Bird.
Yes, he was a don't for me on my first baseman list, and it was for this very reason. And I don't often get too sassy or snarky with my writings. You know, I try to interject a joke here and there just for people to shake their head at while they're reading it. But I said something along the lines of, I can't figure out what has everybody tripping all over themselves to draft Greg Bird. You know, is it the complete lack of track record or his extensive injury history? You know, I just could not figure out why people were drafting him so high. It was just playoff hype as far as I could tell. So yeah, definitely out on him until he can put together a full season. In terms of it, you know, filling in at bats behind him, I think the Yankees will probably just shift Neil Walker over to first, and then you might see a little bit more Tyler Wade over at second base, and maybe someone else too, but we will talk about him as we talk about fourth outfielders in our next segment. But we had Denelson Lamet, I guess I should get his name right. He's going to be out through May from the sounds of it. Denelson Lamet. Denelson Herrera, whatever happened to him? Oh, I liked him. Anyway, Van, is there anybody else in this rotation? Like, this is just about as bad as the Giants. We've got Clayton Richard, Robbie Erlin, Luis Perdomo, Brian Mitchell. Like, are you filling in any of these guys, or are you just, is it kind of like with the Giants situation earlier, you're going with whatever you drafted already besides?
Well, it is, but it's also kind of ironic that this is also another team that it's a massive park that virtually anyone could potentially succeed in. So, yeah, you mentioned the names, Robbie Erlin, Luis Perdomo, Tyson Ross is another guy that's kind of up and in there. None of these guys really excite me, so I'm not really over the moon for many of them. And this is also a team that they know they're not going to succeed this year. They're not going to perform all that well, despite the fact that they just spent $200 million or whatever on a first baseman. So it's just it's one I'm going to avoid, and I think it ends up being one of those bullpen-type situations where whoever their fifth starter is, it's a guy they're going to hope gets five innings, and they just throw a couple bullpen guys up. So even if, say, Tyson Ross kind of comes back to an extent and is able to throw some innings, I still don't see Tyson Ross being a guy who throws seven innings at any given moment. So it's just a situation to avoid, in my opinion.
I will say I like their rotation better than the Giants' rotation, but that's not saying much. There's just guys that the thing they have in common with the Giants rotation is there's guys in the rotation, and I'm going to exclude Johnny Cueto from this because, I think he can bounce back and give you some stats. They're just not going to give you a lot of stats across the board. I don't think there's a lot of strikeouts to be had. There's guys that walk quite a few, and, I mean, they're just basically innings eaters. So, I mean, if I'm even thinking about any of these guys, it's going to be in a league kind of like we just drafted, a 17-team, 19-team league, where I'm just going to need some guys to maybe meet my innings limit for the week. But other than that, there's not really anything I'm targeting here as far as upside. I mean, you know, there's just not a lot to be had with any of them, especially, you know, the park is, I guess, a positive of that. And I think the offense can be really good. So there's that. But other than that, I'm kind of like this with the Giants guys. I'm not targeting really any of them.
Yeah, one of my favorite pitching prospects, actually, Joey Lucchesi, was considered for the fifth starter role. And if he gets it, then I do have some mild interest in him. He was one of the more intriguing pitching prospects on the Padres that we talked about on Fantrax Dynasty Baseball. So go check out that episode if you want to hear more on him. But I think that he has the elements to succeed. But man, since you are a resident Angels fan, we'll throw this last bit of news over to you. Blake Parker has been announced as the likely opening day starter for the Angels, and you also drafted him in our podcast league draft. So how much do you like Parker? What are the odds that he hangs on to the closer's gig all year?
Well, I mean, Parker is a prime example of kind of the Andrew Miller effect to a lesser degree. One of those guys who was a starter but failed horribly. And Parker's older, of course. He's in his early 30s. So, but moves to the bullpen, kind of finds a delivery, finds a pitch mix, and succeeds. So he's a guy that I think could, I mean, he did last year. He was very successful in the role, and I think he could this entire season. But I also think that Cam Bedrosian is also the guy. He's the name value guy whom Scioscia values. Now, last year I was saying that Mike Scioscia didn't value Cam Bedrosian because he was younger. Now that we're a year past it, I think he's going to be another guy he kind of wants to shuffle in there. And since there is no Bud Norris to throw in and get a job, there's no older guy like that. I think Parker is that guy. So really, if I'm drafting, I'm going to take Parker as my number one, but I'm also going to try and nab Cam Bedrosian as a backup. And particularly with leagues being deeper that we play in, for sure, I think there's enough, if I have enough bench spaces, it's worthwhile to roster them both just in case something happens. Now, Parker's been lit up in the spring, so that's the kind of scary part, but I ignore spring stats for the most part. His velocity's been good. He, from what I gather, has mostly just been working on some pitch changes and so forth. So I think once the curtain drops tomorrow, I think he'll be fine. He'll be back to pitching like normal. And again, I think he could make it the whole season with the role. Now, he's not going to give you Kenley Jansen numbers, but I think if he's a top, you know, 12 closer, maybe that's not going to surprise me too much. I think that's a little high, but if it happens, it's not that surprising.
And I forgot how good his numbers were last year.
Oh,
as far
phenomenal.
As when you, when yeah. you yeah with the 11 I mean 11 and a half K per nine,
didn't walk anybody.
78% strand rate. Yeah, no, yeah, few walks. So, I mean, if he can replicate that, of course, I know, you know, closer situation is a totally different deal. But I think overall, I think he's a nice fit there. And, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in their bullpen. It seemed like, you know, last year when we would talk about these bullpens, it seemed like the Angels bullpen was last year's Rangers bullpen. like this year, it seemed like we talked about them shuffling that and there was nobody there. And, you know, there's a lot of different guys there now. So I think Blake Parker's a nice fit with it. I'm anxious to see it. Like I said, if he can duplicate the numbers that he had last year. But, you know, you looked all throughout his career, that K per nine is ultra high. So he's definitely a guy that's going to get you some strikeouts in that role along with some saves as well.
Well, one thing I want to point out too, also with last year, if this were if he had a Boxberger, that's the Nate trying to say it. If he had a Boxberger number of innings and only threw like 30 with these ratios, then I might be a little skeptical. But he threw 67 and a third, nearly 70 innings. I mean, he pitched a season's worth of relief innings. And he's going to be, looked up the age, 33 coming up in a couple of months. So age isn't necessarily on his side, but he's also not that old. So I'm all in on him this year. I think he holds the job.
Yeah, it looked like he really came into his own last year, started throwing that splitter a lot more than he ever did before. Worked out really well, obviously. So we'll go take a break, eh?
Hang on. I want to get something up because I forgot to say it when we were talking about it. This is going back to the Giants stuff. Real quick, Bumgarner breaks the finger. I was not drafting Bumgarner at all simply because I just don't know what to think of him. And what I will say is I think with him breaking this finger and taking some more time off, it's on his pitching hand, I think this helps his career Do you guys kind of agree with that? Maybe this is going to take some miles off his arm, gives him some time off from throwing, and I think overall it may extend his career a bit. So I'm not going to trade for him or anything this year, but maybe next year I'll take a nice hard look at him. And then with Samardzija, it's a pretty low-grade strain, and he's going to start throwing pretty recently. So I think he comes back at full capacity when he comes back in. So no worries there on his injury.
Oh, I think during the break I'm going to go to Carl's Jr. and get me one of them box burgers there. If you guys want to join me.
Are you sure you don't want a Carl Edwards thick burger?
And he's washing a car, but in his underwear or whatever for a commercial.
A tattered Cubs jersey. All right, we'll take a break here and come back with our favorite fourth outfielders.
Nasty.
Hey everybody, it's me, Joe Pizzapia. Baseball is back, and so is the Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2018 edition. This year, I've got Paul Spohr doing the starting pitching chapter. I've got Jake Seeley doing outfield profiles. I got Sammy Reed doing DFS. We got championships waiting for you. Go get it right now, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2018, available on Amazon in paperback and for Kindle and on iTunes, because once you go Black Book, well, you know the rest.
All right, welcome back on the Nasty Cast. We're going to talk our favorite fourth outfielders, and these are kind of all upside plays, guys that you can draft pretty on the cheap, and if you know something breaks right for them, maybe they have a chance for some more playing time and some fantasy gold. So I think what we'll do here is just kind of go around the horn, so like one guy doesn't take all of our picks. That sounds all right.
Works for me. I also didn't even know what we were talking about with this because I wasn't here last week and I didn't get a chance to listen to the episode. So I hope I did this right, but we'll find out.
Oh, well, you can interpret it however you want.
Right. So it's I don't want to go first. Dance. That's the thing. I always do that. I'm constantly interpretive dancing. But yeah, just I don't want to go first and then I'll go from there. You may hear some furious scribbling noises, but we'll see.
Well, at least it's not that damn keyboard. I haven't heard that for a while. Can't wait for its cameo. I'll gladly start us off because my target's Supreme. Burrito Supreme! And a chicken Supreme! And a cutlet Supreme! Supreme! Jose Martinez this year, obviously my favorite fourth outfielder and / backup first baseman. So I don't think I have to talk any more about Jose Martinez. I think everybody who's listened to any podcast in the spring this year knows how much I like him. And actually in Razzball's bold predictions, which definitely not as bold as Van's predictions, that caused a stir on Reddit, allegedly.
Oh my gosh, everyone was so mad. People don't understand context. Anyway, go on.
I definitely need a team name of Bartolo Colon's cyborg arm.
Cyborg parts, yes.
Cyborg parts. I boldly predicted that Jose Martinez hits 35 home runs, drives in 120, and bats 320 this year. So that's bold, baby. Ron, what do you got?
I went, first of all, I got a few here, but I also had Joe Mart. And, you know, obviously, you know, we all love us some Joe Mart. But guy that I threw out there, and I like him a lot more when he's going to be on the road. And we talked about the team a little bit before is Hunter Renfro. And this is a guy that kind of been forgotten a little bit, you know, as being a top prospect at one point, got called up last year. And I thought it was kind of a head scratcher that he got sent down. I mean, he wasn't performing ultra great, but he was still hitting .231, but he just needs to learn to take a walk. The OBP was putrid at .284. So maybe that was why he got sent down for the to learn a little bit of patience at the plate, but he's still in 122 games, still hit 26 home runs. He still drove in 58. And so he's a guy that he definitely doesn't have, especially with Will Myers moving out to right field. He definitely doesn't have a full-time gig. You got Jose Perello there in left. You got Manny Margot monitoring center field. So he's a guy that you can get ultra late. I don't even know if he was going to probably be drafted in most leagues. It'd be late if he was. But if you want a guy that you can stash on a bench in a deep league and potentially get you 20 homers, he's a guy that you could look at. Just understand that he's going to be a little bit risky in other spots until he kind of learns how to be a little bit more patient, like I said. But 20 homers that late's not all that bad. He's also a little bit older of a guy too, 26 years old. It seems like he's another one that's been around for a while, but cheap 20 plus homer pop there from Hunter Renfro.
With Manny Margot monitoring center field, does he do that from like a laptop, or does he have like an iPad that he can monitor center field with?
It would be called Margonitoring.
Margonitoring. Okay.
I like to imagine that like he is terrible with technology, and he thinks that monitoring is actually just like staring at a computer monitor.
Like one of those old CRT monitors.
Well, I think
massive.
what he's doing. What they're going to have him do is they're going to give him like a bright colored vest, and he's going to be like the center field monitor, like you had the hall monitor in high school. So he's going to be the guy making sure that everybody's safe in the outfield. Nobody's, everybody's getting to their spots on time. You know, he's going to be kind of the guy taking charge out there. So you're going to know where he's at because he's always going to be wearing bright yellow.
There is no running in the outfield.
He's German.
Apparently he is now, too. It'll also go great.
I didn't know that.
The orange vest when he's wearing the Padres, like, military uniforms. He'll just look like he's deer hunting or something. All right.
You won't be able to see anything except his torso when he's got the camo on, too.
It's just a torso or a head floating around out there grabbing. Yeah, it's weird.
Creepy.
Yeah. All right, so I have a favorite fourth outfielder for you here, and his name is Jake Marisnik of the Houston Astros. Last year, he put up one hell of a 259 plate appearances. He had 16 homers, 9 steals, .243, .319, .496. That's not going to happen again, but in a very, very stacked lineup, he does have some power and a little bit of speed, so I don't know what's not to like. I think the batting average is really his only knock, but as a fourth outfielder, I think there's plenty of potential here. You're not going to get full 500 plate appearance seasons or anything like that, but when he does play and if you play the matchups right, I think he could potentially give you some really good stats.
There you go. My next guy is going to be formerly Fat Kemp, now back to being Matt Kemp, who has played himself into an actual role with the Dodgers. When they traded for him, they expected to just let him go, save a bunch of money, and not have to worry about him fatting up the bases. But he's actually hit pretty well, and I think he's got some pretty good bounce-back potential. Jock Peterson is not the player that we expected him to be. So unless he improves by leaps and bounds, I think Kemp will see some decent at-bats to start the season, and all it would take is a benching or an injury or maybe a Puig suspension. I don't know. Like, we never really heard anything after his agency dropped him a couple months ago, so maybe that's just nothing. It's just a blip on the radar. But either way, I think Matt Kemp does have a chance to be mixed league relevant this year.
Yeah, and a lot of people are saying that he may hit third in that lineup, which is bizarre, but if he does,
could be.
Dang, I mean, Corey Seager in front of him, you've got Bellinger behind him. I mean, there's a lot of potential there for some stats.
Talk about a guy who's just free in drafts. Like,
he is so stinking cheap in any format whatsoever. Yeah, you can get it for nothing.
Do you guys remember the Eddie Murphy movie where he played a whole bunch of characters and they were all fat or whatever, the clumps? Well,
no, you profess. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Well, Brian Vaughn, friend of the podcast, he always refers to him as Matt Klump. And I don't know why, but that's really funny.
That's
to me. And it's actually fitting now that he's nice and fat, too.
Hercules.
He used to be. He allegedly dropped like 40 pounds this offseason.
Did he really? Wow. Good for him.
Yeah.
Maybe
him and Kyle Schwarber were like, I was going to say maybe him and Kyle Schwarber started going keto friendly.
Best shape of their life.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I guess it's around to me now since we're going around your horn. Malik Smith is a guy, and I'm not a homer.
Oh, that's a big shocker right here.
Homer. I am a homer, but not in this scenario.
He was on my list too.
Yeah, he's another guy that's ultra cheap, and I think they're going to do a little bit of flip-flopping there in the outfield with some guys. You know, they got Denard Span down there. He's a guy that I'm not ultra excited about, but Malik Smith's a sneaky, I think, 25-30 steal potential if he gets enough at bats, enough games. And he's not really great at anything else, but he's not going to hurt you in a lot of places either. He strikes out about 20%. He does walk at about 8%, so the OBP is going to be okay, not going to be spectacular. You're not going to get a lot of home runs. You're not going to get a lot of RBI. I'm kind of questioning how many runs scored you're going to get depending upon where they hit him in the lineup. But if you want some cheap speed, you know, I talked a little bit, and it all kind of depends upon what you need. I talked about Hunter Renfro if you need some cheap power later on. Malik Smith's another direction you can go if you need some cheap steals there very late in the draft.
See, I have a lot of these steals guys as my fourth outfielders. In fact, I'm going to give you one here. And he's probably pretty much a third outfielder right now because of an injury. But that's Jerod Dyson with the Arizona Diamondbacks. He's another guy who will likely be a starter this season just because of Steven Souza's injury until Souza comes back. But if Souza does come back and he gets relegated to fourth outfield duty, he's still going to be an awesome one. If he gets 350, 400 plate appearances like he always seems to, he's going to steal 30 bases. And, I mean, he hits for a good enough average, walks 7.5% of the time, so he's valuable in both batting average or OBP leagues. Either way is fine. I just like him as a late stolen base guy, and I think the Diamondbacks are doing some really smart things, particularly defensively, because he's really good there. And though that doesn't help us in fantasy, what it will do is put him on the Diamondbacks, where I think he's going to have a starting role for a bit. So if he's healthy, I think you're going to see a lot of stolen bases out of him.
All right. And my next guy, you know, he had a huge breakout last year, and then this season, due to some trades, he is relegated to fourth outfielder duty to start the season. That is Domingo Santana in Milwaukee. I don't have to talk you into him too much. You saw what he could do last year. He's a huge power speed on base threat. You know, five category contributor. He just needs the playing time, and I do think that he'll get plenty of playing time. But it might take an injury to, like, you know, Ryan Braun or somebody else who's roaming around out there to get like full time every day at bats instead of maybe just like four games a week. But Domingo Santana, nice upside play.
Yeah, I'm gonna go here with my next one is a guy that he's kind of one of those Swiss Army knife kind of players, and he lists as a backup in a lot of places, is definitely not a starter. And I kind of preface this, like I said, you know, I got to put a guy there if you need some cheap home runs. I put a guy there if you need some cheap steals. This is a guy in an ultra deep league that if you just need a solid bench guy that's going to give you a tiny bit of everything, and that's Chad Pinder for Oakland.
Pinder hardly know her. Boom.
Oh, and that's another reason I threw him in there. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
Yes. And so potential there for 15 homers. He might steal you two or three bases, which isn't a lot, but you know, there could be 50 RBIs there. There could be 50 runs scored there. And I think that Oakland lineup has the potential to be really good. And I think he could be right there in the midst of it and be part of it. And plus two, in addition to putting him in outfield, in most places, he's going to be eligible at a couple infield spots, second and short, most likely. So he's going to see a pretty decent amount of at bats, and you can put him a lot of different places. And so, you know, he strikes out quite a bit. He does have that K rate that hovers around 30%, and the OBP is not going to be great. But if, you know, for a guy, once again, you know, kind of like we were talking about before, that's virtually free, you know, you could do a lot worse, especially in a deeper league if you need a nice bat to come off the bench and put in a couple spots.
Hey, Ron, I've got a question for you. Let's say you stepped on a spider, right? And then you called me over and you said, hey, Van, look at this. And you lifted up your shoe and I saw the squished spider. What do you think I might say?
Spider hardly know her.
Well, yes, but actually, what I want to make this point for would be, I might say, gross, man. And that's because I'm going to talk about Robbie Grossman of the Minnesota Twins. That's right, Nate. Great segue into that one. If you're in an OBP league, this guy is going to be a pretty good fourth outfielder simply because he gets on base in an insane amount. 14.7% walk rate last year, 14.1% rate the year previously. I mean, he walks a ton. The batting average isn't great, 246 last year, but in 2016 he hit 280, so there's some rebound potential there. He doesn't have a lot of power, doesn't have a lot of speed, but with that OBP, what he will do is likely score you a lot of runs. He's also going to be in a really good lineup because I think the Twins they're going to hit. That's going to be a team that hits really well. So if you've got a guy on your bench that you need to plug in who's not going to kill you in any ratios, but he also might score you a bunch of runs, I think this is the guy, just simply because of the insane OBP skills that he has.
There you go. He's not good defense, and that's what keeps him from being a starter in that Twins outfield. But yeah, definitely, if he can get that playing time.
On Fangraphs, by the way, -11.8 was his defensive metric evaluation last year.
And what's funny is actually one of the games that I went to, I took the wife last year to the Twins game, and Robbie Gross, we're sitting by right field, and that happened to be where Robbie Grossman was playing that game. He was actually playing the outfield. And I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be ugly. And he actually made like a really good running catch right in front of us. And so all of a sudden, that's the wife's like favorite player. And he also, I think he also hit a home run that game. She's like, this guy's awesome.
Whoa.
Like, he's really not, but you know.
Even Robbie Grossman's mom is like, eh, but your wife likes him at least.
Yeah. So in the essence of time, I've got like a whole bunch of other guys here, but we've still got another segment left. We're already running pretty long. So I'll just kind of bunch all my guys up here and then send it to you, Ron. Adam Frazier, he kind of got the boot after the Corey Dickerson trade, but he will still have value, should see more playing time with an injury. And then Corey Spangenberg, kind of the same thing, really, really good against righties. Matt Adams, actually, with the Nationals, if Ryan Zimmerman should happen to miss some time, which he's never done before, I know, but Matt Adams is there to basically step right in and be Ryan Zimmerman whenever he dies. Rajai Davis, potentially some steals in Cleveland. Tyler Austin is the guy who I was going to mention in New York now with Greg Bird being out. Tyler Austin becomes an interesting guy to me. Really good on base guy. Never showed a ton of power, but could be a solid deep league guy. Chris Owings in Arizona. He's more of an infield guy, but he might see some time in the outfield. And then like in Colorado, Gerardo Parra / David Dahl / Raimel Tapia / whoever happens to be getting some playing time. That'll be, you know, that's Coors Field. Obviously, that'll be a situation to monitor throughout the season. And then Jesse Blinker with the Reds. He's kind of a starting platoon guy, but yeah, as cheap as he is, could be a very, very nice fantasy player.
Yeah, I had a couple of those guys on my list. And really the only other one that I had that kind of stands out is Aaron Altair in Philadelphia. And it looks as if right now, because, you know, you got Hoskins moving to left with the signing of Carlos Santana. You got Odubel Herrera being the hall monitor in center field for the Phillies. And then you've got Nick Williams in right is what it looks like. All indications are he's going to be the guy that they're going to go with as the starter and right there. And so Aaron Altair is a guy that I like a lot. I have him in a couple of my deeper leagues. And I think most places he's eligible at a couple different outfield spots. So that helps you out also, but a little bit of home run potential there, a little bit of stolen base potential, not a terrible OBP. I don't know how high the batting average is going to be. He's only a career 243 hitter, but he'll get some opportunities in what could be a really, really nice young, exciting lineup there. So he's really the only other guy that I had to add that you didn't already cover, Nate.
I also had Rajai Davis on my list. I think if he were just a corpse, he could still steal 30 bases. So he's made the team out of spring training, so I think he's going to get enough on there. Matt Joyce had a pretty resurgent year last year. He's a platoon guy, and if you play him in the right matchups, he's going to hit really well. And he might be a full-time guy if they keep DHing Chris Davis with a K. Lane Adams of the Atlanta Braves, since Acuna is going to be sent down for service time stuff, Lane Adams is probably going to start for a bit. He's got some good speed, hits for decent average, and then when Acuna comes up and, of course, bats 500 with 500 homers and 3,000 steals this season, like everyone's predicting, Adams will move to the bench. And then lastly, Jacoby Ellsbury, he's a fourth outfielder now, like he should be. And if he's valued as a fourth outfielder, I think he could be a decent fourth outfielder. He's not a zero in power. He's not going to hit you 12 or anything like that, but he could hit one every now and then. And he has good speed. So I think he's a decent guy that could be a 270, 350 player if you've got him on your bench.
All right, so with that, we'll roll into our last segment of the day, and that is basically who we're infatuated with this year. It's who we drafted the most shares of. It's as ringing an endorsement as you can get, the guys who we actually, you know, we're putting our money where our mouth is in terms of investing in these guys this year. And so I'll just go ahead and get mine all out of the way here, then we can move on to you, Ron. But so, okay, I'm in seven redraft leagues this year, a couple more dynasty leagues, but in seven redraft leagues this year, it will shock all of you, I'm sure, to hear that I drafted Jose Martinez in five of them. So, and he's actually tied with Yoan Moncada, who is my dude at second base. So I have both of those, or each of those guys, I guess I should say, in five of my seven redraft leagues. Justin Smoke, I wound up with in four. Joaquin Soria, also in four. We'll see if that one, he was just so cheap, like, what the hell? That could be a bust as soon as, you know, tomorrow when this podcast is out and Nate Jones goes out and locks down the first save. And that would render me moot, but we'll see how that goes. Eduardo Rodriguez, I stashed in four leagues. Sounds like he's probably, hopefully, maybe going to be back by mid-April, which I will take as early May. you know, as pitchers go, if he's back in May, then that will be just fine with me. And as good as he can be, I will take 5 months of him for basically nothing in drafts. Trevor Bauer, I wound up in drafting three times, Bradley Zimmer three times, and then Carlos Rodon, like Eduardo Rodriguez, as he's just a nothing stash. And, you know, his ETA, I guess, from the disabled list is probably more like mid-season, I would expect, conservatively. But again, just nothing to invest in him. So, you know, what the hell. So those are my biggest investments this year. What about you, Ron?
So a few guys that you probably can already guess that I'm going to have in a lot of places. Eric Hosmer's one that I have in a ton of places. And it's just because he ends up being another great value for me in a couple of leagues. I know in my one league, we keep five guys, no salaries, anything like that. And he just kept hanging around. And I think I finally got him for what would be the equivalent of pick 110. Which I thought was insanely good value for what he's going to put up, especially it's an OBP league, so I was happy with that. Got to go with my boy Chris Archer while he's still a Ray and can still be a 200 strikeout pitcher for my team. I think the value is attached with him and what he does as well. I don't think he's going to help you a lot in the win column, so for that regard, I would welcome a trade. I think that would be a good thing. I had, and this was even kind of before the injury, I had a lot of Steve Souza. Just because I think the potential is there for, you know, 25, 30 homers, 15 steals. OBP is solid. And I think just the injury, you're going to be without him for a little while. I know it's, you know, it's kind of a scary injury for a baseball guy. But at the same time, you know, like in our auction the other night, I got him for a couple bucks. And so I'll gladly stash him for a couple dollars. Lance McCullers, once again, looked sharp in the spring. Just needs to stay healthy. Guy that I've been on since day one. And great offense behind him, just needs to be able to be out there and put up the innings. And then last but not least, more homer stuff for me. So the Rays outfield, excluding Denard Span. And I got Kevin Kiermaier in quite a few places, you know, 15-15 potential late. I talked about Malik Smith earlier, a guy that I think a lot of people don't understand that he's going to be hitting cleanup is Carlos Gomez. And not to say that top half of the lineup is going to be ultra great and is going to be on base all the time. But when you have him hitting fourth in your lineup and you do have Kevin Kiermaier ahead of him, I don't know what Denard Span's got left in the tank. Maybe they can put Malik Smith there at the leadoff spot. I know last year he had a really nice run when they had him batting leadoff last year. And I think that was actually in place of Kevin Kiermaier, Malik Smith, that is. Put him at the top of the lineup and he played well. So Carlos Gomez will have some chances. He's not going to put up ultra huge numbers, but he's still got potential there for maybe 15, 20. So when you got a guy hitting in the middle of a lineup, you know, you got to give him a shot, and he still has, you know, a little bit left in the tank, I think. So, overall, I think that's pretty much all I had. You know, I'm looking here, but like I said, you know, the Rays outfield, McCullers, Souza, Archer, and my boy, Eric.
Homer.
What was that? Yeah. So anyway, got a few Rays on that list. Yeah, I know. A
couple of my guys here. Trey Turner is the surprising one for me because I ended up third in a lot of drafts. And usually my strategy involves going with safety in your first couple of picks for as far as a guy that you know is going to provide you elite level numbers. And that guy should have been at Nolan Arenado for me. But I don't know, something tweaked or changed to me, and I decided I wanted to go with the upside of Trey Turner. He doesn't walk, so that means there's a little more risk involved with him, but those steals, man. So Turner ended up being on a lot of my teams. Dustin Fowler is a guy I got late in a lot of leagues. Lewis Brinson. These are all guys that I took with flyers late. That Fowler's probably not going to start with the team. I just wrote about that actually on Fantrax, which we'll, I guess, probably mention later. But Brinson's going to start, and he's going to hit leadoff and play center field for the Marlins. So I think based on where I drafted him, which was too early in one league, but in a pretty good spot in other leagues, I'm going to get good value out of that. Lucroy I ended up with a lot just because he cost me nothing, and I think he's going to have a decent rebound. Yoenis Cespedes, I thought, had a bit of a down year. Well, obviously, he had a bit of a down year last year, but I think he's got a little more in the tank. Chris Davis, I took in almost every league, it seems like.
With a K.
Quack Davis, Chris with a K. What, 247 average 2 years in a row, but also 40-plus home runs 2 years in a row. I think he's about as safe as it can get as far as, you know what you're going to get out of him. Justin Upton, I actually mentioned at the top of the show, I think is being kind of undervalued. He's a power threat, and he still steals. And playing in that Angels lineup where he's going to have Mike Trout hitting right in front of him, I think he's going to have a lot of opportunities. So with some health, and it seems like he's comfortable in the American League now, I think he's going to probably repeat what he did last year. And if he doesn't repeat it, he'll get close to it. As far as pitchers go, Luis Severino was my boy. I mentioned him earlier as well. If you can get one of those top four, this is the guy I think that probably will be back in that top four group as far as next year. I think he can keep it going. Jose Berrios, I ended up drafting a lot. I like the position I took him, and I think there's another level for him, of course. Chase Anderson, I believe I mentioned him earlier as well, as just a guy that who's probably not as good as he was last year, but he's a very steady, nice presence, and I think he's better than his average or what people think the average of it could be. I've ended up taking one of the Angels pitchers at some point. So your Skaggs, your Haney, your Shoemaker, one of those guys I've had on almost every team just as a flyer guy who, you know, if they're healthy and they get their innings, you're going to get some decent ratios out of them. Haney's probably the one I'm most interested in just because I think there's a lot more upside, but also think there's a lot more risk with him just because of the how the proximity of the surgery he just underwent. And then lastly, Walker Buehler was a guy I took as, you know, the last pick, Mr. Irrelevant, in most of my leagues, because I think if there's some injuries or ineffectiveness in that Dodgers rotation, Buehler is as ready as they can be, and he hasn't had Tommy John surgery yet. So that means I think he could get called up, fill in some spots, and go from there.
Keyword being yet. All right, that's our show, folks. Let's see. I suppose we could get our plugs out of the way now at the back end of the show as opposed to the top like we usually do when we're organized. Van, what do you got coming out this next week?
Well, I kind of mentioned, of course, you and I both write for FanTracks or FanGraphs. FanTracks. No, I had it right the first time.
There you go.
I'm tired and I'm old. I'm older now, by the way. Birthday last week. So, yeah. But anyway.
Yeah, happy birthday. And celebrated
in
Labor Day.
Yeah, thanks for wishing me happy birthday on my birthday, guys. I love you, too. Uh-huh. Yeah, but anyway. No, I'm kidding. I don't even talk about it, so nobody knows when my birthday is.
Hey, to be fair, I sent you a gift. So
you did. Okay.
Just saying.
Before we go any farther, then let's talk about those gifts. Those gifts are amazing. Check out, I believe, Facebook or Twitter. Ron got us all customized bobbleheads, and they're based off Star Wars. Nate's is Chewdawkin, which is amazing.
Holding him right now.
And I turned around to look and give a nice look at my Vando Calrissian, which is amazing. So, yeah, great stuff there. Oh, but anyway, so fan tracks. I just wrote an article about prospects who either basically their status going into the season. So, for example, Lewis Brinson going with the team, Scott Kingery going with the team. Willie Calhoun getting sent down and what to expect from these guys. So that just came out today. And of course, check out our other podcast, the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball podcast. And then my other podcast, which just came out today as well, the Launch Angle podcast with Jeff Zimmerman and Rob Silver, where we went over some news and some bold predictions as well. And go check out my bold predictions article, which came out last week that everyone hates me for. So do that and tell me why you hate me and how much you hate me.
I have Big Guy Fantasy Sports. I'm going to start the On Deck Circle next week, you know, talking about some of the prospects that are going to be up soon to help you out in the event of an injury, which we seem to have had a flurry of those in the last couple of days, and get that going next week. I'm going to throw out a couple of more sabermetric articles as well over there, just kind of help those, you know, the first couple were kind of geared towards your draft. The next couple are going to be kind of geared towards if you want to find some guys on waivers. Still doing, we start our actual recap, daily recaps over at Fantistics this week, so I'll get that started coming up. Still doing the consistency football stuff on the podcast with Bob Lung. We recorded last night. I think it's actually up today if you check out Bob's Twitter and check out the website, talking about just kind of laying the groundwork for the whole consistency model, what it's about, where it came from. We talk about Bob's touchdown-only football league that started in 1985 that is still going strong today with the same guy, pretty much the same guys in it, so that's kind of cool. We put together a pretty solid show last night. And then last but not least, you mentioned – the custom bobbleheads. I want to give a shout to my bobblehead guy, Jose Mata, and Oakland War Customs is the guy that put those together. I went to him with an idea. He put it together way better than I ever thought they could be done. And he's got some amazing work. He does repaints. He does pretty much anything I think you could think up. That guy could do it. So check out his Facebook page, OaklandWarCustoms.com. Thank you, Jose Mata. You are the man. You are the best at what you do. And go check him out. Check out his work. It's amazing.
Oh, and I forgot to mention, too, I told this to our Patreons that whoever wins the league we discussed this year, the Listener League, will pay to have Jose Mata do a bobblehead for them. So you'll get a custom bobblehead on your own. So that's something to look forward to there. I'll go ahead and post that on that league there as well. So more incentive for listeners out there next year to get in the league because we'll do cool stuff like that as well.
Oh, man. No, yeah, no. I totally forgot to bring that up when we were actually talking about the Listener League. As the listener always, every year, gets an interview on the podcast to ask them about their season and draft strategy and all that stuff just to get their voice on the show, which is fun. We get to talk to them. And also, we'll get a goodie bag. I'll send them some Dots pretzels, too. So God knows what else we'll have by then. So, yeah, as far as my plugs, I wrapped up the Dudes and Don'ts with closers the other day, and so now we're rolling into the season, so I'm going to start pumping out my Fire and Ice performance evaluation articles, so you'll be able to find that on Fantrax, and God knows what I'll be doing over at Razzball. But that's it, guys. The drafts are done. Projections don't matter anymore. It's time for some real games. You get to actually see some box scores starting tomorrow. So enjoy opening day, everybody, and may the fantasy gods shine upon you.